the podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Libby. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit me at 50countingdown.blogspot.com or listen to my podcast of the same name, 50 Counting Down, available on iTunes. So, wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. You ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
Hello and welcome to Run, Run, Don't Tell Me, the NPR Running News Quiz. How's everybody doing? We're coming to you live from the Lower Wisconsin YWCA Fieldhouse. We're going to start with the Wait, Wait, Minor Celebrity Running Quiz. Today, our guest contestant is Peter Sagal, accomplished marathoner and host of some other public radio show. He'll be playing for one of our longtime listeners, Elma Finkelstein, who's a member of WGBS Boston, a professor of Uzbek wellness studies, and she lives in the People's Republic of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Welcome, Peter.
My pleasure.
We're going to ask Peter a question on running, and if he wins, Elma Finkelstein from Cambridge will get the voice of Newman on their home answering machine. Newman will read one question, and Peter has to guess which is the correct answer. Newman.
Hi, welcome, Peter. The term fartlek is a running term which refers to what? Again, the term is fartlek. Is it A, a term originally used to define the distance between the hoof and the ground of a galloping horse? Sprinters now use this term as a measurement of stride length. Is it B, the Swedish term of speed play used when a runner works in some faster segments to their training, called tempo training? Is it C, runner slang for what happens when your running partner ate too many beans the night before your training run? Or is it D, the method in which dogs greet each other?
Well, Peter, for Elma Finkelstein of Cambridge, Massachusetts, what is the correct definition of fartlek?
A.
Oh no, I'm sorry. The correct answer is B, the Swedish term for speed play. But thank you for playing. Our next guest is the great coach Bill Bowerman.
Hey Chris, this is Rich, one of the guys over at GoWagon.com, and just wanted to drop you a message and let you know how much I really enjoyed the Midpackers Lament. I am a bookworm, I'm always looking for a good book to read, and even though I've heard you talk about this a couple times on your podcast, I didn't actually download the book till about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I'm now kicking myself that I did not do this much sooner. But I tell you, as soon as I started reading it, I was completely engrossed in your stories, absolutely loved your writing style, and just really think you did a fantastic job with this book. Kind of funny, my wife got into the Twilight series of books the exact same time that I downloaded the Midpackers Lament, and there was a couple nights where we were both so engrossed in each of our books that I honestly don't think that we talked for like 2 or 3 days. Kind of funny stuff, but I tell you, the other really cool thing that I liked about this book, and I wasn't sure at first, was the ebook version. I was originally going to download the hard copy, and instead I went with the ebook version, and it actually worked out perfect for me because I am a very loyal iPhone user, and unfortunately these days I'm running around like crazy and have very little time to read, although I really like to read a lot. So I was able to pull the book up on my iPhone and kind of read it anytime I had a couple of minutes to spare. I could knock out a couple of the stories. So very cool stuff, And I just downloaded the Midpacker's Guide to the Galaxy. Looking forward to reading that. And I hope very much that you are working on the third installment of this series, because I think that you are very talented, and I think that there's a lot of people that will be entertained by your work. Best of luck to you, and take care.
Welcome to episode 68. This is Chris, your host, and we have a great show for you today. Yes, it can get better. Today, I chat about running with Peter Sagal, the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. That's a radio show for all you 300 NPR listeners out there. And he made the great mistake of entering the Twitterverse. So we hunted him down and brought him to ground like a crippled gazelle on the savannah, myself and the other little Twitter elves, Libby in particular. Thank you, Libby. And that was her in the intro. Go listen to her new podcast. And Newman, my friend Newman, helped me out on that NPR Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me parody commercial there. And I got some great, nice words from my friend Rich, Rich at GoWagon.com. So go check out GoWagon. Getting great reviews. So Peter Sagal, yeah, he's hilarious. I mean, obviously, has his own radio show. But also, he's a member of the Hardcore Running Tribe. He qualified and ran the Boston Marathon. And I give him big props for that, because he could have easily got a waiver, because all of the leftist socialist NPR listeners in Boston would have rose up and got him a waiver number. But he cowboyed up and he ran the time, and I respect him for that. So, hey, how are you doing? It's springtime. Have you taken the time to go outside today and smell some flowers or look at some squirrels or something? Are you planting a garden this year with some wonderful vegetables? You know, don't forget to take some time for yourselves, folks. As my friend, he's not my friend, but he would be if I knew him, Mr. Covey, Stephen Covey, would say, you have to remember to sharpen your saw, because you're no use to us dull. All right, so, you know, don't run like it's work today. Run like a child. Look around, see your world, and appreciate this day. I've got some tips. I got some audio for you. Let's get on with that show.
And now for the equipment check.
Okay, so I got a shoe review for you. I bought a new pair of shoes last week at the New Balance Factory Store up in Lawrence, Massachusetts, on 5 Union Street, on the west side of the mighty Merrimack River. I bought a pair of neutral cushion trail shoes, and these things have the name of an 874. Now, I had a pair of New Balance trail shoes before, and they were okay, but I didn't love them. And I didn't love them because they just didn't have enough cushioning in them. They were like wearing nothing at all. They were like wearing those foot gloves without the toes. And so they, you know, I could run in the woods with them, but any time I got on anything hard, they really didn't provide any shock protection or any cushioning. So these are very much improved from those. These 874s are extremely light. And I really like the way they fit my feet. It feels like you're wearing no shoes at all, basically. And I got a size 12 foot, so it's hard to find a light shoe in a size 12. And they don't have as high a heel as the other ones that I've been using. And it's not a bad thing, because it sort of makes me run with a longer stride on my forefoot, and that's perfect for the trails. And the forefoot lugs are awesome. There's such great traction and grip on that forefoot lug. I just love the way these shoes make my stride stretch out and give me great torque and turnover on the trails. I don't think I could wear them anywhere on the roads, because they just don't have the cushioning for that. But for the woods, they're awesome. Now, they also don't have a lot, because they're a lighter shoe, they don't have a lot of roll support. So, yeah, you could definitely roll your ankle in these shoes. But, you know, I run in the woods all the time, so that's less likely to happen to me. And plus, the heel isn't as high as my other shoes, so there's less of a physical torque on the ankle when you plant, because your foot's lower, right? Because we all know that the torque is equal to the force times the moment arm, and when the heel is lower, you have less of a moment arm. Exactly. So just ignore that last bit. So I really like these shoes. The other thing is the toe box is rubbing a little bit. I think the toe box is a little tight, especially on my right foot. I'm not sure they're gonna wear into that better, but I can see on a, you know, if I took them for a 26-mile run in the woods with a lot of downhill, I might tear a toenail or two off. But other than that, I love them. Way better than my than those cheap Saucony's I've been wearing. So they I haven't got them totally wet yet, so I don't know how they run wet, but so far they're running great. So New Balance 874 neutral cushion, high mileage neutral cushion. That's me. See ya.
And now for our featured interview.
Hello.
We're back.
Great.
Peter Sagal, NPR.
Hey. That's me.
Great. I get that. I'm like nervous talking to you because you're a famous guy.
I'm public radio famous.
Yeah.
Which is not quite famous. What public radio famous means is that the people who actually know who I am are people who listen to me and like my work, and that's great. But if you don't listen to what I do, then you have no idea who I am, and I wander through life in complete anonymity.
Yeah. Well, I had sent you a joke over Twitter, which is how we got introduced.
Sure.
That the only person who makes less money than a NPR reporter would be somebody who has their own podcast in their spare time. So,
and there you are. I mean, you're actually, you signed up for this poverty.
So, you're a runner, huh? We see you in Runner's World.
I am occasionally in Runner's World. I have a column there, which is great fun.
And you're hardcore. You're out in Chicago.
I'm fairly hardcore. I think in the wide spectrum of running, I tend toward the more hardcore. Far from the most hardcore. I mean, there are guys out there who do things that I'm just like, what, are you crazy?
Yeah.
I'm definitely, you know, on the more obsessive hardcore end of the hobby. Or,
yeah,
is it a hobby? What is it?
It's an obsession.
Right.
It's not a hobby. It also could be a disease at times, is my understanding. So, have you been running all your life, or
Well, my story is slightly more complicated than that. I was a fat and acneed and not particularly socially adept kid when I was a teenager, and I decided that I would try to do what I could about one of those things that seemed most amenable to treatment, i.e. the fat problem. So I started running when I was about 15.
Mm.
And this was, like I said, prior to this being very unathletic. But my father had run and jogged. In fact, I had made fun of him for running around and jogging.
Yeah.
And he, you know, and I always credit him for this, is that, you know, I said to him, all right, so I'd like to get up and go running with you tomorrow. And he didn't say, oh, you've been making fun of me all these years, huh? Now you want to. He just said, okay. And he woke me up at 6 a.m. or whenever it was, and I strapped on my kids, and I slogged with him. You know, I made it about half a mile before I just started to die and complain. So I walked home, and then I did something I'm still very proud of, which is the next day I got up and did it again. And because of that, you know, threshold effect that we're all familiar with, and because I was 15, it didn't take me long before I was actually, you know, going a mile or 2 miles or 3 miles. And by the time I graduated high school, I had run a season with the team's cross-country team, the school's cross-country team, and I had done a whole bunch of community 10Ks and so on and so forth, and really got into it. And that lasted more or less until I got to college, where other things intervened.
Yeah.
And then I started slacking off, and over the intervening, oh, God, really, 20 years, there were periods in which I ran a lot and periods in which I ran very little.
Yeah.
Episodic. Yeah, just like everybody else. And, of course, I got married and was raising a family and was trying to do a lot of things. And you know, sometimes it just seems like, you know, if I go running, then I can't do X, Y, or Z, so I won't go running.
Yeah.
And then, like a lot of people, like most people, I turned 40. That happens sometimes. And I looked at myself, and I looked at my life, and I had gained some weight, and I just, you know, and of course I was immediately terrified of dying because I had just turned 40. And I decided, as many do, that if I ran a marathon, I would not die.
No, you live forever.
Exactly, and I didn't think about this too clearly. You know, I didn't subject this to any logical scrutiny. I just decided that would be the case. So I never ran a marathon before, never run. I think the longest I'd ever done was a half marathon that I did when I was 17 or so, back in that first period.
Right, but you knew how to run.
Yes. And, I mean, well, knowing how to run, you basically put one foot in front of the other until your heart gives out, right?
No, so, I had a similar trajectory with cross-country in high school.
Sure.
You know, being the slowest one on the cross-country team and then, you know, getting to college and forgetting about it until I was 35.
Right, exactly. So, I think a lot of people go through that.
Yep.
One thing I've discovered in these last few years I've been a serious runner, I am not unique. Anyway, the point of all of this is that I decided to run a marathon, signed up for and finished in about 4 hours the Chicago Marathon. And there comes a moment, I think, for everybody where they finish their first marathon. And either, as many do say, people say, hey, I did that. That's great. I did that. Now I will go on to other things. Or they say to themselves, I wonder if I could do that faster.
Right.
And I was one of the latter and have run 4 marathons since then, including Boston, which I qualified for the next year.
Oh, you did?
And, yeah. Right. And have been pretty much hard at it for the last 4 or 5 years, just really intense running with a group.
Good for you.
Yes.
Because you could easily get a waiver entry, and you went out and qualified anyhow.
Well, you know, I mean, I thought about that, and it occurred to me that maybe if I called up somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, the Boston Marathon might say to themselves, hey, you know, we can the minor celebrity here.
Yeah.
But it just didn't seem unfair. The whole point, if you take away the qualification, Boston's just another marathon, if an old one. But the whole point of going to Boston and running it is that you earned it. So I really wanted to earn it. And in fact, since my qualification has now expired, and my last 2 marathons, which were Chicago 07-08, were both heat sinks and death marches, I now need to requalify, so I'm back to square one. Thankfully, I get 10 more minutes.
Yeah, so you just cross that next boundary where they give you the 10 minutes. But
yes.
I was interviewing McGilvery, the race director, a couple weeks ago. And since it sold out so early this year, they're actually thinking about the qualifying standards. So
they're thinking of tightening them?
Yeah.
Don't you tell me that.
I'm guessing that you and I fall squarely into that demographic that needs to be tightened.
Do not tighten this. I am so excited about having that extra 10 minutes this next time.
Yeah, it makes it easy for a while.
Yes. We're hoping.
So, yeah. There's a big difference between a 320 and a 330.
It is exactly 10 minutes of difference, and I'm really excited about that.
It's much bigger than that, though.
Yeah, I know. Those 10 minutes are enormous.
The level of effort your training is enormous.
I know. Believe me. I mean, my qualifying time, my time that I ran to qualify for the 320 was 3 hours, 20 minutes, 39 seconds, and that took everything I had. So believe me, I know.
Yep, I've done that. I ran a 320.08 one time or something.
Yep.
That lasts. And most people don't realize you get that extra 59 seconds.
Thank God I do.
And I'll give you one thing more, is that you actually get more than that. And if you were to send in it won't let you register on the website with a qualification standard that's bad.
Yeah.
But if you're within 3 minutes, you should mail in a hard copy.
Really?
Because they may let you in anyhow.
Really? I'll mention that I have a friend who's desperate to get back to Boston, and he just missed by, I think, 30 seconds.
Yeah,
I will let him know.
Yeah, I missed 1 year by, I don't know, 8 seconds or something.
Wow.
Ridiculous. And because it was one of those things where I was on the course in the last, you know, mile, and somebody said, you only have a half mile to go. And, of course, it was, you know, like 3/4 of a mile to
go,
right? One of those things. So, and they let me in.
I'll mention that to
seconds. Him. Yeah. So there you go. Learn something new every day.
I hope what you say is true, my friend.
I don't know.
Because it would be a great thing for my friend to be able to get in. He's been trying to he ran it earlier and is desperately trying to get back in.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker to miss it by a couple of seconds like that, because you think, okay, what could I have done differently, right?
Exactly.
Should I have jogged that one water stop to get those 10 seconds?
Right.
So how do you fit this in with your busy lifestyle?
Basically, I had to make a decision. And I made that decision, and I've kept to it. It's the reason I didn't run a marathon for a long time, because I didn't have the time. So the decision I made was get up early.
Yeah.
So I've been getting up at 5:30 or 6, basically, almost every morning for the last 5 years. That's the only way. And I need to, you know, on weekdays, I need to be back home by 7 when my kids get up.
Yeah.
On weekends, my wife is very indulgent and allows me to go out for a couple hours in the morning while, you know, she's up with the kids.
Yep.
So, but that's the only way.
Same old.
Yep.
And then you travel as much as I do, so you must get some time on the road.
I do. In fact, that's a great pleasure. It's a little easier for me on the road, of course, because there's no kids or anything. But yeah, we travel with the show a lot, and I've seen many cities and/or you know, beautiful natural areas because I get up and go running. Otherwise, we'd spend the entire time sitting in our rooms working on our radio show or in the theater doing it. So I've run, you know, in the Redwoods in Arcata, California, and around Seattle and. You know, in the industrial areas south of Charlotte, North Carolina, and on and on and on because of this habit of mine. In fact, for the first time, we're going to go to Austin in May, just a couple weeks from now, and the station there auctioned off a chance to go running with me, as well as a local running guru, whose name I don't have at the tip of my tongue right now, around Town Lake there in Austin. So that'll be the first time I'll ever do it as an official thing, but I would have done it anyway.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I found you have some of your best epiphanies just pointing your shoes in one direction and going out of
yep.
the hotel.
Absolutely. That's, I mean, one of the things I've done recently, it's been successful a couple times, is I ask around, and sometimes I'll call it, like, for example, we were in Seattle last year, and I run with friends at home, and I called up a running shop, and I said, hi, do you have any organized runs? And on Friday morning, or Thursday morning, whatever it was, and he's like, no, I guess we don't. You know, our running groups tend to go out on other days. I said, oh, well, you know, my name's Peter. And the guy said, Peter Sagal? And I said, yeah. I said, I'm a big fan. I'll run with you. So I had these two guys from the Seattle running community who took me and I never would have run it myself around, you know, the neighborhoods around Seattle. And also learned a lot about, you know, their running scene and what they do, and they're all ultra marathoners and so on and so forth. And that was kind of cool.
Yep.
So I'm trying to do that more and more when I can.
Yep. Same thing. I find you're meeting people, especially with the social networking tools. You can meet people almost everywhere.
Yeah, it's really great.
Pretty cool. So what have you learned about yourself over the last few years with all this running?
Well, I've learned that deep inside, fat, slovenly, lazy person was at least a mildly accomplished amateur athlete, which was exciting for me because I've been pretty much of a brainiac my whole life, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually become something of an evangelist about, particularly to my own children, which annoys them, but also to other people, which is that, you know, you need to get out of your head, you know. I think it's really important, particularly for those of us who sit around and stare at computers or just sit around and think all day and get kind of self-involved about, you know, our life and what we're doing. I think it's really important to stop that and just go out and run or swim or do anything you care to.
Yeah.
But it's good to get out of your head, and this is something that I become, you know, not only devoted to now, but kind of wish I had done more when I was a kid. And the second thing I've learned is that I'm actually capable of more than I knew I was. I didn't know that I could. I mean, it never occurred to me that I could do this. But it turns out that if you really apply yourself, I mean, really apply yourself, and put up with a lot, and make plans, and execute the plan, you can do an awful lot.
Yep, and we have talked about this so many times. That's the great marathon metaphor. You have this aha moment that says, if I can do this difficult thing, you know, qualifying for Boston or whatever it is, then what are all these other things that I thought I couldn't do, right?
Exactly. And, you know, if you can do that, you can do anything. And I probably invoke it way too much when I'm talking to my kids when they get depressed and, you know, upset about whatever. My kids are young, too, but, you know, and I often say, I didn't think I could do it, but I did it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't hear you talking about running and that sort of thing on your wait, don't tell me.
Well, I'm very...
Do you try to keep them separate? Do you do that?
Yeah, I do. Mindful of how boring running can be for people who don't run. One of the reasons I'm happy to talk to you is because I need other people to talk to about running to get it off my chest. But, yeah, people who don't run, that's the last thing in the world they want to hear from you is your half marathon times or your, you know, want you to evangelize, you know.
Yeah, I was talking with my buddy. It's the syndrome where you're at the cocktail party and you meet the one other runner there.
Yeah, and you're like, ooh.
Big eye roll from your wife, right?
Well, I remember I went to a party and the other happened to be a very attractive young woman. And she's like, you're talking to that woman the whole time. I was like, yeah, but she was a runner. She ran the marathon. We were there, you know. Like, was she a woman? I didn't notice, you know.
That's funny. So you're going to write a running book, or
I don't think I'm going to write a running book. I mean, I have to say, I'm a moderate fan of Murakami.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a superb and interesting writer, you know. And I tried to pick up his running book, and I couldn't get through it. It's like, I'm sorry, but it's running. It's just running down the street. I don't think I would subject again. Some poor general audience to my, you know, thoughts upon my own musing upon running. I don't know.
Yeah.
I love doing the column for Runner's World, but that's for other runners, and it's supposed to be funny, and it's about this sort of sometimes very strange equipment. But I recently did a piece for them about qualifying for Boston, and even then it was like so hard to avoid invoking all those cliches.
All the hyperbole.
Yeah, you know, it's just, I'd love to. I have a copy of the novel Once a Runner on my shelf. I'm looking forward to reading it because everybody says, it's the best novel I've written about running. And I'm like, man, can this guy actually tell me something about it that I don't know?
Yeah.
You know,
I find with the other books, like the prescriptive books, like, you know, Hal Higdon, those sort of things, I can't read those. Because I'm like, I already know all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? It's But I did like the Murakami book. The prose was a little Japanese and staccato for me, but it was I thought it was interestingly introspective.
Well, that's his style, you know. And I just, you know, I mean, what's interesting to me is that, and this may be just a reflection of my own feelings about it, a fantastically interesting novelist who, by virtue of talking about his running, became just another boring guy talking about running.
Yeah, that could be true. So with your Runner's World stuff, we found out that you're a big Garmin user.
Yes, I am.
You like the Garmin, huh?
I love the Garmin, mainly because, you know, I like instant feedback. I'm still the kid who, you know, needed to know what grade I got on the test right away, you know, who's constantly wondering if I got the A. And so the great thing about a Garmin, of course, is it lets you know, oh, you just ran that mile, so, you know, this is your pace, and that was your pace, and, you know. And it also, I'm also a very bad record keeper. I mean, I've never been able to keep a journal or even a calendar, so I envy all those people who just, you know, always write down what they do. And the Garmin, of course, keeps track of it for me.
Right.
So that's a blessing as well.
Now, other than that one lark, did you end up ever running in those fingered shoe things?
You know, I didn't, and that's I'm almost surprised to say that's the case because I finished the test of those and I actually kind of liked them. More so.
I bet they'd be good for running on the beach.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they'd be terrific for running on the beach because, as a matter of fact, soon after I used them, I went running on the beach and just tore up my feet because of the sand. So they'd be great for running on the beach. And they'd be wonderful for, like, you know, splashing around in water or doing boating or stuff like that. I do use them for weightlifting because they're really great in the gym. I didn't mention this. I did, but it got cut. They're terrific in the gym because a lot of times, you know, you're standing there and you're lifting weights, and it sort of helps you kind of weirdly grip the ground.
Yeah, you can use those. Yeah.
Yeah, plus if you're doing anything where you're putting your legs in the air like leg lifts, it's nice not to have the weights. So I like them a lot for that.
Huh, that's cool. So so what else? What other projects you're working on besides this Runner's World stuff?
Well, strangely, I'm sort of in an interregnum between other projects. The radio show has taken up a lot of my time. I wrote a book a couple years ago, and my editor really wants me to write another one, so I'm trying to think about that.
Yeah.
But basically nothing. I mean, I love being able to occasionally contribute to Runner's World, but I got to get myself going again. You know.
Yeah.
But so, you know, how can I work on anything when I got all this running to do?
Yeah, but running, you get your best ideas when you're running, right?
Sometimes.
That clarity of thought, you get some epiphanies. But it's sort of like being drunk because when you get back, sometimes it's hard.
Yes, I know. You're like, what was I thinking?
Well, I wrote this down on this napkin.
I know.
The solution to all the world's problems.
Yeah.
So you know, you meet a lot of, I would imagine, some other minor celebrities in your life. You know, have you ever been really surprised to find out somebody was a runner?
You know, I'm trying to think about that. You know, sadly, my interactions with these celebrities are often often limited, so that doesn't really come up. Also, what do you do for exercise, I say? And a lot of times I don't see them. So, you know, maybe they're wearing their Boston Marathon jacket and I don't notice.
Yeah.
I have struck up a very pleasant correspondence with the cartoonist Jeff Mallett, who's a fan of the show. In fact, he name-checked me in one of his comics. He does Fraz.
Oh, yeah.
And as he writes about, he's a really intense triathlete. So he and I have gone back and forth a lot about running, and that's a great pleasure to talk about that.
So what, do you plan to do a triathlon, or have you done
I, you know, I'd like to. I've been swimming more recently. And that had always been for a lot of, again, this is very common, that had been the sticking point. I'm not a good swimmer, but I've been, particularly because I injured myself this spring trying to train for a marathon, pulled a muscle, I've been swimming more, and I'm like, wow, maybe I could do this. And now I'm thinking, wow, that would be fun. Plus,
yeah,
I get to buy a bike.
You should at least dabble.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking of dabbling in triathlons. That's what I'm thinking
most,
of doing.
Yeah, most marathoners go through a triathlon phase.
You see, once again, I'm being typical.
Yeah,
I can't break any new ground here.
Well, the other thing was you train until you hurt yourself. That's typically the curve too.
Yeah.
How do you know when you can't go faster? When your body tells you.
Exactly.
Go faster.
Ow.
Yeah. So cool. So what kind of advice would you have for our new runners or our runners?
Well, you know, I mean, again, I am so aware of this. How much I sound like everybody else, but there are three things that everybody says that I've said to people. First of all, set a goal. You know, it doesn't have to be a marathon. In fact, I'm kind of object to people say, I've never run before, but this year I'm going to run a marathon, because what will probably happen is you'll fail and you'll feel bad.
Right.
And there's
or
really
you'll
no
do
reason.
It once and then never run again.
It'll be so painful and awful. You know, you'll end up being like one of those actors who trains, you know, to get all muscular for a movie, and it was so painful and the project over and you'll just forget it. So what I say is people pick a, you know, do a 5K. Run to a 5, get up to a 5K. The second thing is, you know, don't run every day. I'm a great believer in the Furman Institute plan, of running every other day, interspersing that with cross training. I think it prevents injury, and mainly it doesn't make you bored.
Yeah.
You know, when you're running every day, eventually you're going to get up and you're not want to go running. And you know, that's, you know, if you run every other day, you'll end up looking forward to it, which has been my experience. Oh, I get to run today. Great.
Yeah, when it starts to become like another job, it's you've gone too far.
Exactly. And the third thing I always say to people is, and this was, if any one thing really contributed to my going from a neighborhood jogger to a pretty, obsessive runner, it's this, is that I found people to do it with. And that was a huge change for me because, A, I'm not much of a joiner to begin with, and secondly, it had always been, this great thing to get away and be by myself and, have my thoughts. Murakami writes about this, that he always runs by himself and it's a solitary thing he does and all the value, and I totally would have believed him if I hadn't had this experience of falling in with this group of friends.
Yeah.
And now I almost never run by myself. And because of that, I run further, I run faster, I run better. Because of that, I get out of bed and get out there on mornings when I wouldn't want to, but I know my friends are waiting, so I'm going to go. And it's all the difference in the world. And it becomes actually just this wonderful, in a weird way, it becomes some of my favorite social moments of the week is when I'm out talking to my running friends.
Yeah, and, I was talking about sitting in the bar before. Running almost becomes a social lubricant when you get out there and you're doing it with people.
Yeah, you're very at ease. You're very comfortable. It's a very low pressure social situation,
yep.
And I speak of this as someone who is often, believe it or not, uncomfortably socially and wondering what I need to do and am I being entertaining enough to entertain the table? And yet, when they're running friends, we're just running. It's no problem.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's great because you start talking with somebody and next thing you know you just ran 8 miles and what happened?
Exactly.
Right?
Just yesterday I went running at a place here in Chicago, a 9.5 mile loop, and we started out just chatting, and then toward the end my friend picked it up and I caught up with him when we finished the last 3 miles going really fast, 7-minute miles, and I never would have done that on my own. Probably wouldn't have been out there on my own.
Yeah. You run down on the waterfront?
Well, I run on the waterfront when I can. I live about 10 miles west of downtown, so that's a drive, so it needs to,
right,
or an organized expedition.
Yeah,
this place
that cement's too hard anyhow.
Yeah.
So
if you're running Chicago, you got to get used to it.
Yeah, the windy city. So what's on the calendar for this year?
Well, I had meant to run 2 marathons this year, the inaugural Illinois Marathon down in Champaign-Urbana, and then New York. I injured myself, could not run Champaign-Urbana, which made me sad, because my whole plan was to have 2 marathons in case one went wrong. This year, I could still have a chance to qualify for Boston. So now I'm definitely running New York, but thinking about another fall marathon, probably somewhere in the Midwest, so I don't have to get on a plane. My friends have talked about Columbus. We've talked about Milwaukee. We've talked about the Quad Cities Marathon in Western Illinois.
Yeah, there's a couple in Ontario that are close to you, too.
Ontario?
Yep.
No, that may not be close enough. But anyway, so I'm thinking about doing that. But basically, that's it. I'll do a half marathon, maybe a 10K this summer.
All right.
And so like I said, maybe a triathlon.
Getting back to your base mileage, trying to get healthy.
Exactly. That's my plan.
There you go. Well, Boston kicked my butt this year, so I have to get back on the horse sometime this year, too.
How was the weather? The weather was good this year, wasn't it?
Weather was good. And back in the mid-pack where I am, I run probably about the same pace as you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no wind unless you want there to be wind,
right,
when you're with 26,000 other people.
Yes.
So, it was nice and cool, and that's why I tried to race. Because at Boston, you only get that nice weather, once a decade. So,
right,
if you get it, you got to try to race.
Right.
So it ate me up. So,
well,
all right, man.
All right, my pleasure.
It's been cool. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Then thanks for reaching out.
Yeah.
Let me know when the podcast goes up.
Yeah, I'll send you the audio too. All right.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
Oh, good morning. This is Chris. Who else would it be? And here I am in the green truck. You can hear the windshield wipers going. It's raining like crazy. It's been raining all week. As if I didn't have the blues badly enough, it has to rain all week. But I got the lawn mowed on Saturday, so at least the front yard isn't like a jungle. So I got about halfway through my honey-do list this weekend. So anyhow, was going to ride my bike to work and back twice this week, but couldn't do it today. Just couldn't bring myself to ride in the rain. I rode in pouring rain on Tuesday. Actually, in the morning it wasn't bad. It was just damp. But on the way back, I got the rain. And yeah, I really, you know, once you're wet, you're wet. It's not a big deal, but it's not, certainly not comfortable. You know, I'm not in this to torture myself. So I'm going to see what I can do in the gym today. Maybe a little stationary bicycle, and maybe do some weightlifting. So I'm slowly converting over to bicycle. So last week I got a couple of rides in. This week I ran Sunday, and I also then went out with Anthony for 2 hours on the mountain bike in the woods. Anthony is a sponsored mountain biker, so he's, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but he's giving me training, and I'm learning a lot. It's one of those things where I thought it would be a lot easier. I remember when I went through my triathlon phase, I looked at triathlons. I said, well, I know how to run, check, and I know how to swim. I mean, I was one of those kids who grew up, started swimming 2 years old, always was in the pond, the pool, swim underwater, the whole thing. You know, I was a swimmer, so I figured that was going to be easy. And I said, the only thing I had never done before was biking. So I said, well, you know, that's probably going to be my weak sport. Come to find out that swimming for fun and swimming in a race are two entirely different things. And I was horrible because not only did I have to learn how to swim, I had to unlearn how to swim. So even though I was a strong swimmer with no fear of the water and all that stuff, I had to unlearn all that stuff to be efficient in the pool, you know, and on the race course. And that was a real learning curve for me. I had spent a lot of time in the pool. Whereas on the bicycle, where I thought I'd struggle, I fell right into it because it was just all effort and leg strength. And I got effort, and I got a fairly high pain endurance level, and I got fairly good leg strength. So especially the hill climbing, where I could use my leg strength, you know, just stand up on the pedals and grind it out. So fast forward to this mountain biking stuff, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be a snap, because I already know how to bike, and it's the same thing, just in the woods. Chris, turns out it's different. First of all, it requires balance, of which I have very little. And the other thing is, you can't stand up at the pedals. You got to sit on the seat for the most of the time, or you lose your traction. So it's taken my strength away from me, and I got to retrain my legs to be able to essentially spin better. Instead of being a grinder, I got to turn into a spinner. So it certainly is a learning experience. A couple interesting things about mountain biking that I've learned are, you know, some of the simple rules are just keep pedaling no matter what. You find yourself thigh deep in a butthole, just keep pedaling. So that's an interesting learning. But it's just amazing. Amazing how bad I am at mountain biking right now until I get my legs. Because, you know, it's like I grew up riding a motorcycle too, and that totally throws me off because I'm, again, what you do on a motorcycle when you went into some crazy hills or rock gardens, as they call them, you'd get up in the pegs to take the shock in your legs and then accelerate through with the throttle. You can't do that on the mountain bike. You got to stay in the seat to maintain your traction and pedal like crazy to get your torque up, and it's very unnatural for me. But I'm learning. Hey, I like learning curves. So anyhow, that's my story. And a rainy day today, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, that's it. Episode 68 in the can. I have exhausted our time together thoroughly. So let me make this quick. Next up, I have an interview with running legend Joe Henderson for next week. And I've already got this interview done. It's awesome. If you stick with us, you'll learn a lot from Joe next week. I'm always looking for people to help me out with, like, parodies and scripts and to read my intro. Just send me an audio or call it in on my call line. I think it's mentioned at the end of the show in my bumper on the end. And I'm also going to interview a running bra company after that. And to do that, I'm going to collaborate with a couple of lady runners, Eva and Joe. Joe is LI runner. And that should be interesting. Awesome Woman Blues by Coco Taylor. And this is called Voodoo Woman to take you out. And sorry for going so long today. Thanks for hanging out with me. Have a great weekend, and don't forget to check for ticks. And I will see you out there.
They call me the voodoo mama, and I know the reason why. They call me the voodoo mama, and I know the reason why. Lord, if I raise my hand, you know the sky. On my shoulder, you're looking dead at you. I got dust from a rattlesnake. I got a black spider bone. If that don't do it, baby, you better leave it all alone. They call me the voodoo mama, and I know the reason why. Lord, if I raise my hand, you know the sky.
Listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.